At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business, like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at vistaprint.com.
Welcome to another episode of the No Ceilings Podcast. I am Tyler Metcalf, joined as always by Tyler Rucker. Tyler, how's it going?
I'm doing good, Metcalf. You know, I get so excited when I realize it's Thursday because it's just like this is the ribbon on top of the bow of the week. Tomorrow's Friday. I get to end the week talking hoops with you on the Thursday podcast. So another good episode. I'm excited. Things are getting crazy. I'm already getting nervous and pumped at the same time for the plethora of work we're going to have for the next couple of months. But let's get after it. How are you doing, sir? How's everything? How's the pup? How's the pup? We got to educate everybody about the updates on the pup.
The spirits are high. The playfulness is there, which is encouraging. She's still being stubborn about eating, which isn't great. But
yeah,
the energy,
so we're day to day.
The vitals are all good. So we're thinking just a little stomach bug. Take her into the vet and get some medications tomorrow. Should be good to go. No dire worries like there was the other night when I was up till 2 in the morning at the ER with her, but should be good.
So she's in load management with
– correct.
If it was the playoffs, she could play. If she was absolutely. In March Madness, she could be – okay. All right. So absolutely. That's where we're at. We're good. We're good. Yeah. Home stretch.
Yeah, exactly. We're just biding our time. But yeah, so pup's all good. I'm good. I'm a day away from being on the side of a mountain skiing for a couple days, which I cannot wait for. But like you said, we get to wrap up our week talking hoops, which I'm incredibly thankful for. And this week, we're right on the precipice of these postseason tournaments, and the season is over this weekend. We're going head first into conference tournaments, and then March Madness is right around the corner. So it felt like a good time to kind of start throwing around some postseason storylines that we could see developing. And we're going to start off today's conversation with some ones that we think are pretty likely to happen. So we're each bringing three to the table, ranging from mild to spicy to lava hot. So as we progress throughout, we're going to kind of devolve into more absurdity and have a little more fun with it. But to start off with with the storyline that you think is likely to happen, where are you at?
You know, I talked about this with Stephen Gillespie the other day. We were doing a little bit of a March Madness preview, and he brought up a good point that I think's going to be fun to watch. I think the battle at the top still is going to be really notable. Like when it comes to Paolo Banchero, Jabari, Chet, obviously, and you know, even someone like Ivy or Johnny Davis. I think, you know, March Madness, as you know, Metcalf, like this is where guys get some late steam. Guys get a little bit of a push when it comes to buzzing in draft circles. And I feel it's going to be interesting to see what team of those guys goes the furthest, because I feel like they're going to be in a position where they're going to have like the last opportunity to kind of send a statement to the NBA, you know, draft world. And I was just thinking about that after Steven brought that up. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of a real shot to be true. And, you know, someone like Banchero, I'm specifically going to be watching closely, because if Duke can make a little run and he takes his game to another level, because I think he's going to be motivated to remind everyone, you know, like he belongs in the conversation for the top pick. So, I mean, it's easy to talk about those guys, but I really do think it's going to be thrilling to see, because – that margin's getting narrow, and I really do think someone's got a chance during these last conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament to kind of make one final push before, you know, draft workouts and interviews and stuff like that. What about yourself? Who are you looking at? What are you thinking is a good storyline moving forward?
Yeah, so it's ours kind of tie in together. But I think you're viewing it a little more where the race for number one or two is a little wider. And I think that Chet and Jabari are going to pretty much separate themselves from the rest of the pack as the top two picks. What both those guys do is pretty absurd. When you look at their physical profiles and skill and shooting defense and just everything combined into one package, it's a really unique combination. And I've had Chet number one all year. I don't care that he's skinny. Get over it. There's so much other things that he does on the court that the skinniness doesn't matter. If he relied on overpowering guys, then yes, the skinniness matters. That's not how he plays. He plays with skill, awareness, length, all of that stuff. He knows he's skinny. He compensates for it and is one of the best rim protectors we've seen since Anthony Davis. So I think those two are really going to separate themselves from the rest of the pack. It wouldn't surprise me if Paolo kind of gets... If Duke makes a big run, he's going to have to be shooting it well. He hasn't shot well down the stretch besides their last two games he did, but there's like a 10-game stretch there where he was shooting really poorly, which has been kind of my big concern with him all season. So just the skill set, the uniqueness, the size, the versatility of Chet and Jabari, I think both of them are primed to make really deep both conference and NCAA tournament runs. And their versatility is really going to shine and just push them so much farther ahead of the pack than everyone else.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think those two are definitely separating themselves. I just have this weird hunch, this really weird feeling that like Paolo, beginning of the year when they played Gonzaga in Vegas, that dude had energy coming out of the play. Like it was just surging through the entire building. He was running around the floor like a little kid on Christmas morning. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be another spark where he's going to be like, all right, it's time for everyone to like, everyone's going to be watching me. I got the national spotlight. This is my statement. This is my time to remind the world, like I belong to be in that conversation. But I do think it's going to be interesting because like you said, he has so much damn talent. The footwork, the size, the offensive firepower. I'm not denying that. And he's had to do a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. But it's going to be interesting to see the shot. If he can put together a couple strong stretches where he's shooting the ball well from, you know, shot selection and from outside, I really do think that could start to make his case a little bit warmer to get up there. But I still think with what Chet and Jabari have done lately, it's going to be hard to knock them down. But, you know, Paolo can do some stuff. Like, he might go on a tear. He has the upside to all of a sudden get nuclear from the field and maybe puts up a 30-point game or something like that. Like, he has that upside. So I'm like you. It's going to be really fun to watch those. And, you know, like we got to talk about this before we move forward. The Johnny Davis, Jaden Ivey debate, like that's going to be fascinating, too, because, you know, we're talking about those top three. And I also want to figure out, like, who's going to be the top guard? Like, who is it going to be? Because I go back and forth every day. I know you love Johnny Davis, but I feel like it's pretty much what side of the bed you wake up on. There's just so much talent.
Yeah, I'm glad that you kind of rebrought up Ivy and Davis there because I wanted to pivot to them, not for a new storyline or whatever, but because you mentioned them earlier, and those are the final two guys that kind of round out my top five. And I've been on Johnny Davis Island all season. I think he's the best guard in this class, and I have that pretty much locked in. I think he's pretty much locked in at number four, Ivy right behind him at five, but the two-way impact that Johnny Davis carries on a nightly basis for that team is absurd. He's their primary scoring option. He's the best passer on the team. And then he's defending the opposing best player every single night on every single possession. On both these matchups against Purdue, he was guarding Ivy from pretty much start to finish. Obviously, there was some switches and stuff in there throughout the game, but the majority of the time he was on Jaden Ivey, and Ivey was hiding in the corner on another guard. I think the defensive impact that Davis brings to the table far outweighs anything Ivy does defensively. Ivy, we were kind of talking about this before we started recording, but Ivy just seems disinterested on that end of the floor, where if he's off ball, he's kind of standing with his hips on his, or his hands on his hips. And I just rarely see him pick up the best opposing guard. It's frustrating because he has the athleticism to do it. He has the athleticism and strength and all of that stuff to be this really good defender. So maybe it's just a thing of coaching staff not telling him to do it. Maybe it's a thing of him just being frustrated about his role on offense, because I think we both agree that it's not ideal.
No.
So I'm not trying to undersell Jaden Ivey, because I 1000% understand the argument for Ivey over Johnny Davis. But the way that Johnny approaches the game in every single possession and does whatever his team needs him to do or asks him to do, it's I think it's just really special. And he just constantly executes at a really high level in every facet of the game.
Yeah, so it sounds like me and you got the same top five, except I have Ivy ahead of Johnny right now. But I understand exactly what you're talking about. And it's fascinating, because that last game, I watched the whole game when they were playing against Wisconsin. It was an awesome game. And it was weird, because Ivy looked, you know, not disinterested, but he looked frustrated. And I understand why he's been frustrated, because if you're watching him as an evaluator, you're like, just give him the fucking ball and please let him go. Like, it's so annoying. Like, you're just like, you have a freight train out of hell and you're leaving it at the station. So
wait, so you're telling me that you didn't tune into that game for the Tyler Wall, Zach Edey post up battle?
No, I did not. I did not.
Okay. Interesting.
They're treating Edey like he averages 20 and 20, and it really does frustrate me. But I understand when you have pretty much Andre the Giant in the center of the paint, you might think that's an offensive thing, but it just frustrates me. So the defense is really interesting, because I've talked about this on previous podcasts with Metcalf. He basically just makes a statement, and then it's like launching a seed in my brain for 5 hours. So now I was like, oh boy, I'm going to have to watch Jaden Ivey film late tonight now, just defensively. But you know, the thing with him is, it's a weird characteristic of some guys that are pretty much the stars of team. And I don't like it, but I understand it. I think when you're the guy and you're taking the reins of the team, you're relied upon to carry the load offensively, I think you could coast defensively, kind of try to store some energy. And I'm not trying to give excuses, but I think he's such a competitor, and I think he's got the passion to play with the game. Mm-hmm. I think he can become a really nasty defender, but agreed. I just need to go watch more. But I understand what you're saying with, like, Johnny had a couple plays in that game defensively. I was like, man, okay, that was nice. Like, you can see it. Like, he's willing to go to war. But I still think Ivy can be up there. It's just fascinating. Like, I'm right now at the point where I'm going pretty much one by one, just watching guys throughout the entire year, because now we're at March Madness. We almost got the full slate. And Ivy and Johnny's going to be one of my favorite debates. Because I feel like you watch one and you're like, oh, this is fun. And then you watch Johnny Davis mid-range, you're like, oh boy. And then you go see Ivy in transition, you're like, gosh. So, like, it's almost becoming a more exciting debate than the top three, because it's just those guys are so unique, so special. Their NBA skills are, like, different, you know, because Johnny's going to be this mid-range assassin. Jaden's just going to give everyone Morant vibes. So, it's going to be fun. I'm excited for those two, especially in the tournament. Like, I want to see which one of their teams gets farther. What do they do to step up? Because I think both of those guys are just elite competitors. Those guys are fierce.
Yeah, and I think at this point, I'm pretty much in the minority having Davis over Ivy at this point. And I've seen a lot of people even talking about, could Ivy go number one? Which, for me, I know. But I just want to kind of take off the rose-colored glasses here for a second and yes, I know there are some flaws in Johnny Davis's game. But like when we talk about the defense, Johnny's not like the most technically sound defender out there. He's really good at avoiding screens. His off-ball awareness is excellent, but and his on-ball footwork is really sloppy, where he's crossing his feet and turning his hips all the time, but he's always fighting. He's always recovering. He's always working. He's always there. So even though like the technical standpoint isn't the most impressive, like you said, that competitiveness, that desire to at least get in the way, to be disruptive, to be obnoxious, I think is so important. And if you can, if you can give me a guy with that mindset on defense and offense, then I feel more comfortable about being able to teach him how to slide his feet. So that's kind of where I'm at. And in the past, I've really struggled kind of separating a player's skill set from situation and how that situation negatively affects it. And maybe that's just the case for Ivy's defense right now, because we both think that he has certainly the physical tools to be a good defender. We both view him as an awesome competitor. So maybe it's just a standpoint of what he's being asked to do on that end. But I think there's so much on defense for him to show that he really hasn't this year.
They are both good enough that I think all it takes is one franchise. All it takes is one organization to fall in love. Like, I think they are both good enough that we might be watching the draft and all of a sudden the third pick is one of them. And it might just be like, whoa. And I know everyone's thinking like Ivy could be up there in front of Vaccaro or whatever you want to say, but I wouldn't be surprised if Johnny goes that high. I really do think someone's going to be very fond of their intangibles, just kind of the type of competitor and players they are. And Johnny's been absolutely sensational. I really do think the defense is starting to impress me even more. And I'm right there with you. I think he's got some stuff you got to clean up when it comes to fundamentals and stuff. But off the ball, like kind of when it comes to rotations, he's had some nice protections at the rim out of nowhere. I'm like, oh my, okay, that's a basketball play. But Ivy's also shown some stuff like that too. So yeah. It's going to be – it's fun. I'm almost weirdly more excited for comparing those, like, because that is going to be absolute warfare, like going between those two when it comes to your final evaluations. I already know what the top three is going to be, that type of monster. But then I'm going to get to a point where I'm like, okay, do one of these guys need to get into the top three? So, yeah, I think that might be the toughest evaluation of all. So I'm right there with you. It's just I thought this draft class was going to be like a top three. Now I'm really getting pumped about like the top five, six, seven. Like I think there's some serious fun pieces at the top that a lot of people are starting to come around on. It feels like people are starting to get comfortable with like that top seven or eight now. And it's like, cool, let's keep those numbers going up, boys. Like, let's go, boys and girls.
Yeah, and it's almost too on brand that I took a conversation about the top three and pivoted it into a 10-minute debate on Johnny Davis. But before we move on, I want to circle back to Chet and Jabari and kind of pick your brain on, I believe you have Chet right number one right now, and I think you've had him there for most of the year.
I've had him every damn day. I've had him since the beginning of time.
What would Jabari need to do, or is there anything he could do to leapfrog Chet in the next month?
I mean, I
and if not, what does Chet do right now that separates him so clearly for you?
The problem is like people are going to hear me say I have Jabari too, and they're going to be like, oh, you're not high on Jabari. No, I love Jabari. Like, love Jabari. Like, people can call me crazy. I even threw this at the No Ceilings crew. I was like, the guy gives me KG vibes, like, with some of his shots he takes, just, like, kind of one of those, like, pull-ups and on the elbow, like, stuff like that. Just some of the stuff he does on the perimeter. And I'm not saying he's Kevin Garnett. No one ever is going to be. But just the way he moves on the court, he's got some feistiness. I love Jabari. I really do think that's the guy that is going to have a very seamless like transition when it comes to every team's going to be like, he'll fit. He will be fine. He will fit us in any way. I just, man, this The Thin Man is so damn fun. I love watching Chet. I'm just a sucker for guys that can do a bit of everything. Everyone's gonna talk about the frame. And someone I really trust in the scouting world, I asked in the beginning of the year, just kind of trying to be like playful. I was like, are you worried about the frame? And he's like, the frame gets people fired if you worry about it too much. And I was like, yeah, that'll shut me up. So, and it's not just the fact that he's skinny. It's his mentality. Like, he knows you're coming after him. He yep. knows you're looking at him like, I'm going to overpower this guy. And he welcomes it. And then he goes at people. Like, he plays his ass off. Just everything I've heard when it comes to intel about Chet, I've loved. And I don't want to rant too long, but I just think that is going to be a really special defensive player at the NBA level when it comes to floor awareness, like rotating, his shot blocking. He's absolutely incredible. I really do think, like, it's weird. I don't think of it as like a bad thing that Jabari's too.
Yeah,
because he's been incredible this year. Mm-hmm. And trust me, I've had nights for everyone listening where I'm like, man, Jabari might need to be up there. And it's been uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden I watch the next Chet game and he goes berserk. And I'm like, okay, there you go. Like, and then Jabari goes back and does it again. So I don't know. It's just fascinating to me what Jabari's done offensively. Because some of the shots he's hitting is really impressive. It's not just like hitting wide open shots. It's taking over games. And you're seeing the confidence with both those guys just absolutely thriving. So, I don't know. What do you feel about it, Metcalf? Like, is there something Jabari can do to get ahead? Or are you still, and it's not like a prideful thing where I'm nervous to move Chet down. It's just everything I've watched with Chet. Yeah. I'm absolutely fascinated.
Yeah. And my big concern with Jabari is that he's so uncomfortable dribbling the ball, and he's so ineffective finishing at the rim. It's just weird because someone of his athletic gifts, his size, it just feels weird. But then he's arguably one of the best, if not the best shooters in the entire class. And when he takes out 1-2 dribble pull up or that jab step pull up, it's lethal. It's unstoppable. And then I love pretty much everything he does on defense. He's not a great rim protector, but he's a 6'10 forward who can switch on anyone on the perimeter and ruin their life. So I'm right with you. I absolutely love Jabari. I'm not sure that he has this Paul George upside that a lot of people are claiming, because he does not have Paul George's handles. And if you're pegging, if you're billing him as that type of player, I think you're going to be disappointed. But if you're viewing him more as like a second or third option who has a lot of on-ball equity, who's this defensive monster and will knock down any shot you give him, I think you're taking that every day. Just the uniqueness of Chet is almost impossible for me to pass up. Go ahead.
Can I ask a weird question? And please. It might set off a atomic bomb in my mind. Why does everyone keep considering Jabari as a wing? Is it just because he plays on the perimeter?
Because he shoots the way he does. And but he has the fluidity and athleticism of other wings.
I mean, he's a power forward.
Yeah.
He's a power forward that can stretch the floor. He's a power forward that is a dream transition for the modern NBA, because he plays like a power forward and he can hit the three ball. But like, I keep seeing guys be like, oh, he's a wing. And I'm like, are we saying he's a wing because he shoots threes and and can play out there?
Yeah. Which is the wrong way to look at it. Cause I'm with you. He's a power forward. I'm not playing him at the three.
If that's what everyone's thinking, I might need tequila. So
he doesn't have the on-ball equity to create his own shot or create for others that we're seeing most threes have now. The entire NBA offense is perimeter based now. Just because he plays on the perimeter, he shoots from the perimeter, does not make him a wing. I'm right with you. He's a power forward who can switch pretty much everything defensively and be the best shooter on your team.
And that's why I have him too, is his defense. I've been like, you did a fantastic breakdown on his defensive footwork in the beginning of the year for one of our YouTube videos, and you did it on our website, but I've watched him switch onto some smaller guards, and the way he moves, his feet are, oh my gosh. Like I could watch a highlight of just that for 10 minutes. Like it is unbelievable how quick he can get laterally, get side to side. Like that is the stuff.
And he's in like a full squat the entire time. Like my legs are sore after watching. It's like, oh my God.
It is all energy and passion and giving a shit. Like he is, I love it. And that's why I got him too. And it's also not a knock against Paulo. It's just, that's where, how impressive I think Jabari's been. You're talking about a guy that came into the year. Everyone thought he was just going to be a nice offensive piece for Auburn with the ability to potentially stretch the floor. Now he looks like a two-way freak of nature that can hit pull-up threes and go coast to coast. So, yeah, I mean, that's a good one. I really struggled with not having him one. And then I just kept watching Chet. I've watched those two closely, and I'm like, man, those guys are both just so special. It's gotten to the point where if you have Jabari one, I don't see anything wrong with
it. I get it. Yeah, I get it. And if he goes one on draft night, I'm not going to be like, dumb idiots.
No, I'm going to be like, shit, you got a player.
they're going to be happy.
Yeah.
Whoever's at two is like, yeah, you're going to be happy too. But we could talk about these two for days.
Yeah.
So let's move on to what is your second storyline that's a little spicier and a little more unlikely, but you could still see happening.
So I'm doing spicy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You ready for this one, Mr. Metcalf?
I doubt I am.
Trevor Keels is going to play himself into the lottery. Yes, let's go. Yeah, you guys thought I was getting quiet on this, and I'm only heating up. I really think it's going to happen. I think the outside shot's coming along. I think if Duke is going to have a tournament run, it is going to be because Trevor Keels. I know what Paulo's going to do. I know how much me and you love Mark Williams. He's going to keep doing his thing. But Trevor Keels can push the needle forward for Duke. He can be a game-changing presence. And if he keeps shooting like he's been shooting lately, I think that stock's going to be sizzling. I'm talking being at Benihana and watching them throw your food on the table sizzling. Like it's going to be the onion volcano, so... That's my spicy take, and I'm horrified for my lava take later because everyone's going to be like, let's turn this off.
Okay, so you don't have any concerns about him being in the 18th percentile on wide open catch and shoot
attempts? Nope. Okay. I've watched the last slate of games, and it looks like a different player, and I'm telling you, people better – I'm gonna die on this hill. I think this guy is going to be – a heck of an asset at the next level. Still extremely young. I think the shot's going to come around. I love how he plays defense. I also think he's got playmaking ability. No, throw those numbers in the damn garbage can. I don't care because I've watched what he's doing lately. He struggled all year shooting from outside after the really impressive game in the beginning of the season. I think the last like five games or something around that area, he's like in the 40%. So he's really starting to come into his own. I don't know. Wanted me to get some spicy takes? There's my spicy take.
No, that's fine. I like Keels. Not nearly as much as you do.
Yes.
But I really like him. So in his last however many games here, I'm just going to run through his 3-point. So it's 5 of 8, 1 of 4, 1 of 4, 3 of 8, 1 of 3, 1 of 2, 3 of 6, 1 of 3, 3 of 4. So that's like about his last 10 games or so. So not bad numbers, low volume, decent efficiency.
I'm going to get my numbers now too, Mr.
No, that's
Metcalf.
Fine. No, I want to take that to pivot into what is he in the NBA? I know you've been saying Marcus Smart all year, but do you view him as eventually like a starting point guard or more of an off guard?
I'm kind of considering him probably to be a point guard, a more of a point guard. The problem is when I say Marcus Smart, I'm not saying like he's Marcus Smart defensively. He's Marcus Smart 2.0. I'm just saying I think that's the type of player he's going to be. I think he's going to be that impactful presence that might be a sixth man early on, but he's a game wrecker. And I think he could come in and give you great minutes if you need a point guard to take control of the offense. If you need someone to play off the ball while maybe you have like a star point guard that is your offensive force, he can come in and be a great backcourt mate. I just think he's like a utility weapon. Like he's going to be a Swiss Army knife where you can get a lot of good basketball out of Trevor Keels. And, you know, he moves laterally so damn quick. He's built like a linebacker. I just think he's nasty. Like he has that, what you're talking about with like Johnny Davis, where it is the competitiveness. It is, I'm stopping you. You're going to have a miserable night with me guarding you. Like, I just think that he has that. And there's still so much upside. He's going to be very young on draft day. Metcalf just read all those numbers out and he made me look like a fool. Well, guess what? I'm going to throw it right back. His last seven games, he's averaging 14.6, 5.0 rebounds, 3.0 assists, 55% from the floor, and 42.9% from three. So, yeah, I'm buying it. I'm buying it. And yeah, I'm staying there.
I didn't make you look like a fool. Those are the exact numbers that
well, I just went off.
You just put it in percentage form.
You threw it like it was like, I heard some 1-for-6s, and I was like, okay, everyone's going to hear that and be like, okay, he can't shoot. I just think the shot is what was holding him back. And yes. Now we're seeing a little bit of a flash of like, he could go in the tournament and go ice cold. And I'll be like, all right, shit, here we go. But he also, this could be like building confidence to all of a sudden, if that's coming around in the tournament and he's having some 16.5 rebound, 5 assist games with a couple steals, then I'm like, okay, that's going to be a nice piece. And I still think there's just a lot of question marks with the guards in like kind of outside when you were talking about like the point guard class, if you want to put Keels as a natural point guard. I still just think he's going to be a combo guard that someone might be like, hey, we're going to get a weapon here, and he might need time to get the offense to be more consistency. But I just really like how he plays defense. Damn, he's a damn pest. So, yeah, now I had to defend myself for like 15 minutes on Trevor Keels, but I will do longer if I have to.
No, I like Keels. I really like his potential. It's for me, it's just the consistency. And
yes.
I think a big issue with that consistency is that he's one of the youngest guys in this draft, which you pointed out. And shocker, young kids aren't super consistent. So it's not surprising. Just selfishly, it'd make my life a little easier if he was a little more consistent.
Right. Right,
so
right.
I definitely like what he could develop into, what he could be. And the type of player that you're describing, I don't think is super outlandish as an outcome, because we have seen multiple games and multiple flashes of it throughout the season. So I definitely think there is a guy that can really be molded into something. There's into someone who produces at a really high level in the NBA.
Yeah. And you know, I'm not trying to throw someone randomly under the bus, but like, I still feel like Keels can make an impact in the NBA in a number of different ways. Like, say, I'm not trying to throw someone under the bus, but like Jean Montero, let's say undersized point guard, he comes in the NBA and he just really the shot or, you know, his creation when it comes is just not working. So what's Montero going to be? Like, I think if Keel struggles to get his shot rolling early on in his career, he's still going to probably be a really damn good defender. He's probably going to understand, like, how to make plays for his team. And that's where I'm buying into him. And I know this is rich for a lot of people's taste. I know some people have him late first round. Like, I just think anywhere he goes, he's going to be a fun developmental project.
Yeah, and I have him at like 22-ish right now. And, you know, that can fluctuate 2 to 3 spots on any given day, obviously. But I think that that point you just made was really important, because when we talk about the potential for a lot of these guys and what they could grow into, the idealized version is what we always think about. And it's always so grand and beautiful. It's like, yes, thank God. But then for, I think what really separates a lot of these kind of, you know, this could sound like an insult and I don't mean it to, but like these mid-tier prospects is, what if this thing that needs to go right doesn't? Mm-hmm. Who are they then? And for a lot of the guys, it's, they're not an NBA guy. They're playing overseas. They're doing something else. But for the ones who make it and the ones who stay at least at the end of a rotation or the end of a bench, or at least have an NBA career, they're the ones who, okay, this didn't go right. Okay, well then I became this and I leaned on this skill and this. And I think you pointing out that Trevor Keels has that versatility and those different things to kind of fall back on if, say, the shooting doesn't really take a leap, if the playmaking takes a step back or whatever. I think that's really important because there are all of these different avenues that he can go down if a roadblock pops up on one of them.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I have a soft spot for guys like that, because I'm like, well, he still makes a bunch of damn plays, even if the shot isn't falling. Like, he's still impacting the game. He's still showing that he can be a really key piece out there. So that's why I'm just kind of in love with the upside, because I think if the shot comes around, that's a heck of a player. And I think NBA teams are going to be intrigued with that. But, you know, enough Keels. Talk to me. What's your spicy? Let's get on the Metcalf train. What's going on?
Okay, so for my current rankings, me personally, this isn't that spicy. This is like, yeah, no shit. But for everyone else out there, maybe it's a little too spicy, but Max Christie will emerge as a lottery talent.
Ooh, that is getting a little spice. Okay. So we need to talk about Max Christie.
Yeah,
I'm struggling. I'm struggling. Me and Metcalf, for anyone listening, have been, and some guys at No Ceiling, I mean, and just some people in the draft world. Like, I've been loving Max Christie. In the beginning of the year, I thought this was my guy. I watched that game. I think it was against Butler, and he had a couple moves, and I was like, oh my gosh, I am in love. Like, literally was playing like Careless Whisper in the background while watching one of his step throughs. So I'm just so confused. I don't know. Should he declare?
Probably not. I really want him to. So I did this to you before. I'll humble myself now. So I'll just run through his recent 3-point performances. So 0 for 2, 1 of 3, 1 of 4, 0 for 2, 0 for 4, 0 for 1, 0 for 0, 2 for 8, 0 for 3, 3 of 4, 0 for 3, 2 of 2, 0 for 5. And then we get into that stretch of games where he was actually impressive. So that's a really long stretch of not shooting it well from outside for a guy who I think could be the best shooter from this class, which is a weird statement.
It's really strange. It's a really strange year. It is a really strange year, because when he shows those flashes, he looks like a lottery pick. But it's just not fallen. And then he teases a couple of strong games, and then all of a sudden it's back to ground zero. And he's the one puzzling me more. Like, it used to be Caleb Houston. Now I'm pretty comfortable with thinking Caleb should go. But Christie's the one that won't escape my head. Like, that is still the one that keeps me up at night, because I really love his game, but I don't know if he should go. So that's a little spicy, but I do like that. Oh boy.
Yeah, I just, everything he does screams NBA shooting guard to me, besides the fact that he's currently not shooting well. I love how he moves off ball. I think he's going to be a really good defender too. His defensive footwork is really, really strong. And then I think he has the frame to add a good amount of muscle. And I want to put the outside shooting struggles on that right now, because I think because he is a really skinny guy right now. And I want to think that as he gets stronger, that shot from outside will become more consistent, because when he curls off those pin downs in the mid range, it's money every time. And I think his shooting mechanics are absolutely beautiful. So I just, everything he does on both sides of the ball, it's just like, you're an NBA player. Now, if you could just start knocking down some threes, that would be awesome. And Michigan State always ends up going on these runs in the postseason. So if he gets hot, that's when Michigan State, I think, really takes that jump and starts having some of these upsets and getting on people's radars, because everyone always loves to watch Izzo come March. And so eyes are going to be on him already. Just looking at ESPN's current bracketology, obviously this will change, but there's currently a seven seed matching up against Miami right now. I think they would win that game, and then they would play Auburn, and that would be a lot of fun. Just seeing him face the athleticism on that defense would be, I think, a really good test for him. And then if he starts knocking down shots, even if they lose, but if he gets 15 to 20 points on 6 of 8 shooting, that I think that would do wonders for him.
Yeah, I think, you know, Christie might be one of the prospects that needs the tournament the most, because that's going to swing one way or the other. Like you say, if he has a strong first game and opens some eyes, that draft stock could all of a sudden really catch fire. But if he does what he keeps, you know, if he has one of those letdowns, then that might cement he needs to go back. He's just fascinating to me because it's exactly what you said, Metcalf. It is, everything looks great. Mm-hmm. The footwork, the shot, the, like, his ability to pull up on a dime, everything's just so damn smooth. But it's just like, I swear, if you watched him and didn't look at his stats, you'd be drooling. And then you just kind of look at the numbers, you're like, man, like, what's going on? And it's just frustrating because I remember watching that game in the beginning of the year, and I was just like, oh, I'm in love. I love this. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be a really good, sneaky lottery guy. And now I'm just like, I don't know. Because if he went back and took off, like, he could be a top 10 pick. And I know it's very early. Right. I know it's very early. But I'm just saying, like, if he went back, added weight, spent the offseason in the weight room, shot like he looks like he can shoot, and his points per game just jumped to like 15 or 16 or 17, like that range with efficiency, and shows that he can be a pest defensively. I mean, it would be awesome. Like, he would definitely be in that conversation as a lottery pick, but oh boy, that is a good one, because I want to believe so damn bad. It's like, I don't want to turn my back on him because I just still love his upside, but
yeah, that's pretty spicy.
Okay, let's get to your third one. What is your boiling lava hot?
I struggled so bad with this one because I wanted to get just bonkers. I wanted people to like be like, what is wrong with this guy? Like, I was just like, I don't care if everyone comes at me. They already are. So I was like, what can I do that just sets everyone on fire? So, oh boy, here we go. There's no turning back now. Justin Lewis is going to play himself into the lottery. Yeah. Let's go. Don't stop believing. Yeah. You wanted lava? I gave you lava. That is an erupting volcano. I love Justin Lewis. I don't know what it is. I can't put words on it. I'm going to try right now because everyone's listening, but I love this dude. I think this guy has just a serious ability to be a potential weapon at the NBA level. I mean, he's got size. He's got length. He's got a freakish build that he can move quick. He keeps showing fantastic versatility offensively. The three-point shots, high release. He's got confidence in it. He plays with some swagger. The defense is the only thing I think holding him back from being potentially like a actual serious top 20 pick. So if some team is convinced that it could come around, I might not be insane. But for everyone that thinks I'm Hannibal Lecter in a straitjacket right now, it's okay. We were supposed to get a little weird with this. And, you know, Metcalf asked me for a lava take, and that was my first thought. I'm going to believe. Do I think he's actually going to? No. Let's calm down.
but we're having fun here. It's Thursday night. We're getting excited for the weekend, you know? So yeah, there's my lava take. I just really have been impressed with the mobility and kind of he's a slithery. He can do some things that I think he's like, what, 6'7", 6'8", like 240. I mean, he could just do some things off the dribble that you're like, okay, this is nice.
Yeah. And I currently have Lewis at like 38. So
well, that's because you're wrong.
That would be won't be the first time, won't be the last.
I have him at 22. So everyone just remember this. I have him at 22. You can either make fun of me.
I like him, but like you mentioned, I worry about the defense. For this to come to fruition, he would have to go on a monster run, I think. And I just kind of looking at ESPN's current bracketology, currently the 7 seed facing San Francisco, who's a good team, but I think they should win that. And then they would face Purdue.
Yes. Who
I think he would be a matchup nightmare for that team because he's bigger than anyone who's quick enough to guard him. And he's too quick for anyone big enough to guard him.
And his lower base might be bigger than Zach Eddy's. Yeah. I'm not kidding. It might be. Like he might say, Zach Eddy, welcome to the house of pain. Like I understand. This is just being fun. We're getting crazy. I'm just saying, like, I also made my lava take thinking, like, okay, I was supposed to consider maybe the workouts and all that process. So like I'm not just saying this off of only the tournament, but I probably should have. But hey, crazier things can happen. You never know. What if he puts up 30 the first game and then gives Purdue the business and they somehow lose a heartbreaker and he had like 28 or something? I don't know. Crazier things can happen.
They have. I mean, Jalen Smith went in the lottery, so anything is possible.
Too soon. I know a lot of Suns fans listening to this, so that is too soon. Actually, yeah, they traded him. So. They got Torrey Craig back, so actually it might have been worth the pick.
It was a bad pick at the time, so, you know. But I want to go back to Justin Lewis's offense because that is obviously where he's going to make his money. I think the outside shot, it's not awesome right now, but it's legitimate, and I think it will be in time. What he does attacking closeouts, though, that's the special part where he's euro-stepping guys. He's taking guys off the dribble. He's pulling up for two dribble pull-up mid-range jumpers. He's dunking on guys at the rim when they're late to rotate. So all of that, that's where it's like, okay, if he's paired with a point guard who can really put pressure on the rim and find guys on kickouts and stuff like that, then that's where he's going to thrive at attacking closeouts and rotations. And his passing vision out of those situations is really impressive too. The accuracy is a little erratic, but the fact that he's looking and seeing those passes for his position and age, that's really special. And I think as he continues to develop and as the kind of game mentally slows down a little bit for him, it wouldn't surprise me if we really see the player that you're talking about right now, because the tools, the foundation are there. And it's just when and where is he going to take that leap? Because I definitely think it's there.
Yeah. And like I said, I might be buying into the idea that he's going to also create some steam with the entire like workouts, interviews, when he gets in front of teams. I still think that teams are going to be a little intrigued or fascinated with him because I've seen reports of like his wingspan being a number that I was like, if that actually becomes true, that is going to open some eyes. And, you know, I watched their most recent game against DePaul and he had a drive on a closeout and he threw down a dunk. And I was like, oh my gosh, he looked like Inspector Gadget with where he took off and how aggressive he got downhill. So I'm like you, I think there's a really good foundation there. There just needs to be one team that's like, we will figure him out defensively. Like we will get him to work, because if you can do that, there's a special talent there. Like there's a really, really damn good basketball player waiting to rise to the surface. So hit me with the lava take, Mr. Metcalf. I need you to get a little crazy after what I just did.
You know, okay. I don't think it's that crazy.
It's gonna be a long weekend.
Yeah, it's gonna be a long 3 months. What are you talking about? Long week.
Okay, so this is someone who I have 44th on my board, who wrote about recently, who I believe you also are really struggling to buy in on.
I guess wrong. Okay, go ahead.
I'm saying a potential storyline that could come out of this postseason is that Blake Wesley should be a top 10 pick.
Oh, I was going to say this. I was going to say Wesley in the lottery, and you went even higher. Wow, the Justin Lewis call is not as bad now. No, I'm kidding. Okay, talk to me why. What does he need to do? What does
he need to do? Because I think this is realistic.
It's just not as lava as my volcano.
So I just want to run through his last six games here because he's really starting to kind of heat up. So 21 points on 5 of 6 from 3, 7 of 12 from the floor. 18 points on 1 of 4 from 3, 6 of 15 from the floor. 24 points, 6 of 11 from 3, 7 of 14 from the floor. 13 on 2 of 8 from 3, 3 of 13 from the floor. 15 points on 2 of 5 from 3, 5 of 9 from the floor. And 21 points on 0 of 3 and 10 of 21 from the floor. So the volume is there. The scoring opportunities are there. And he's kind of starting to heat up and put up big scoring numbers. I wrote about his space creation the other week, and that aspect of his game, his quick twitch movements, his ball handling, his ability to kind of get to wherever he wants on the floor, I think is really impressive. And in a postseason format where teams aren't, you know, scouting you as much or as heavily on a nightly basis, maybe that becomes a little more of a weapon. We've seen scoring guards go off in tournaments before and really juice their stock and kind of explode in draft rankings. I think Wesley is that type of electric scorer that if he continues to do this, where he's putting up 20 plus a night and knocking down a couple threes a game in the tournament, it wouldn't surprise me if people start coming out and being like, this guy's a top 10 pick. This guy's a top 10 pick. I still want him to go back to school. I think that's where he should go. I know some people out there are already like, what are you talking about? I already have him as a top 10 pick. If you do, congrats. You're bolder than I am. But yeah.
Yeah. I talked about this with Steven on the Draft Capital that I did the other day. I said, you know, I know I hinted about it with Max Christie earlier, but I do think like this is the tournament is the biggest possible thing for Blake Wesley. It's going to decide if he goes or stays. I really do believe that he has the potential to all of a sudden drop 28 and shoot 48% from the field and 40% from three. And everyone's going to be like, oh my gosh, did you see what Blake Wesley did? You know, like that buzz will get cooking and he could probably do it again. That's how streaky guys do. Like if one game the basket looks like an ocean, and obviously the next game it could do the same thing. So I really do think it's going to be fascinating. Top 10 is, oh boy, I would not sleep if I took him top 10. But I do think, like you, me and you talked about this, Metcalf, on a previous episode, I feel like, or maybe it was with Nathan. I don't know. They all blur together at this point.
Appreciate that.
No, yeah. So I'm sorry because I really get excited for these, but then I just like I lose track. But he has a lot of fun tools. I really think that he's an exciting player. I just think he gets a little hero ball, and if you get hero ball in the tournament, it's going to go one or two ways. It is literally going to either scorch you or make you go back. So I don't know. I'm right there with you. I think he could really climb with a couple of good games, especially if he really climbs, tests the waters, gets some good feedback. Maybe he plays in the scrimmages. I don't know, but that's definitely one guy I'm going to be watching pretty close because if he heats up, that stock is going to be fascinating to watch. But top 10.
Yeah, and just to kind of explain why I have him so low, it's the shooting. And I know recently his last seven or so games have really boosted those percentages. But among players who have a usage rate over 30, so high volume scorers, basically, he has the sixth worst true shooting percentage in the country. That's not great. I think his shot selection is brutal. I think when he attacks the rim, he doesn't always have a plan. He actually showed a good amount of craft and kind of creativity in that realm in the Florida State game. But against Duke, Mark Williams just swallowed him up pretty regularly. And those are the type of rim protectors he'll be facing in the NBA. And then the shooting mechanics, I think, are an absolute disaster right now. I think me and you talked about this on an earlier episode, like you said, but they are different on every single shot. So if you can figure that out, add a little strength, then it's like, yeah, okay, now I'm more interested. But I think right now, I think he's going to require a lot of investment of time and resources to figure out different aspects of his game to really get him to an NBA ready scoring level. But if he really hits a stride and is scoring 20, 25 a night here in these, in the conference and NCAA tournament, things are going to get crazier. We saw Johnny Juzang getting talked about as lottery last year, and that never made sense. So who knows?
Yeah. I mean, Wesley has the talent. There's no denying that. He just has bad habits.
Yeah.
And everyone that thinks I'm going to dog him, it's like, okay, go watch some of the shots he takes. Like I saw him take he took a guy off the dribble, got denied, like kind of lost his footing, and then took a fadeaway blind jumper with 20 seconds on the shot clock, and it like barely hit the rim. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then there's also the other player. Like that's where I was talking about, like the hero ball in the shot selection. But there's also the other player that like is a damn good basketball player, where he lets the game come to him. He can make some gorgeous dimes for like dump offs when he's attacking lane, like read the defense. When he lets things come to him and he does not force the issue, yeah, I buy the Blake Wesley lottery hype that everyone was talking about. But the hero ball, the shot selection, the forcing, like he looks like he has that mentality sometimes, and I don't know if it's because of the team he's playing with or just the position that he's been put into, but he looks like he has this mentality of like, I have to score. And it's like, well, sometimes when he moves the ball, like there's a damn good basketball player when he trusts the system and lets the game come to him. But I just think like the shot mechanics is really important, because he just has some really bad tendencies. Like he brings the ball below his knees on some load ups. It's really weird. So yeah, I do think like the conference play, the tournament, if he can have a couple heaters, that's going to make the conversation a little bit more interesting. But I'm like you, I'm still rooting for him to go back, because I think that stock could just skyrocket if he approaches it the right way. But you know, top 10, I need what you're drinking. And obviously, you know, I get the wrong stuff, but it'll be interesting. That's definitely a good one. What you got anything else? Yeah, I mean, do you have any other storylines we didn't talk about? Just kind of open mic it or what?
I don't think so. And I think that conversation of the top five will be really interesting, especially if like AJ Griffin or Keegan Murray kind of do big things and play their way into like the more consensus. I know a lot of people have AJ Griffin that high already. We're seeing some mocks with Keegan Murray going that high, including the one we did the other week. I don't know. What about you?
AJ's kind of creeping in my mind, because I'm wondering if he's gonna play. I feel like he's just kind of faded a little and people are not drinking that Kool-Aid anymore. So I'm kind of excited to watch and see what he does early on, because I think all he needs is another, you know, strong stretch like he was showing in the middle of the year, where that could start getting serious again. Trying to think who else. Ty Washington, I still got a bone to pick with him. I just
need him to get healthy and like play.
Yeah, I just want to watch him. I want to have him have a serious run, and I want to see like extended Ty. Benedict Mathurin, I think he's got a shot to get up there. I'm not saying the top four. I said I think he's just got a shot to get up to maybe like six in a surprise fact, especially if Arizona has a deep run. I'm buying it. I still think Ivy and Johnny will be selected before him, but I think Mathurin could have someone very intrigued, like above 8 or 7 where they're like, hey, we really like him. Like, he checks everything for us. Like, so I know that could be rich for some people, but I do think Mathurin's shown enough over the years that I think he's got the chance to make some noise, because now he's going to have the attention of everyone if Arizona makes a deep, deep run.
Which they should.
I think people are going to be buzzing. I think people are
I have Mathurin at 9, so I 100% see that. I think he's an NBA-ready off-ball scoring wing. I think his off-ball shooting, his athleticism, his cutting, all of that is, I think, going to be good to go from day one, basically. I think the real question is, what is he going to end up being on defense? I don't think he'll be bad, but a little better than he's been, I think, would be encouraging. At least as like an on-ball, I don't know. He just underwhelms me for some reason as a defender, because I think his athleticism just makes me think that there should be more there. Not saying he's bad by any means, but I don't know.
It's there. I promise you, like I've watched, it is there. I think it needs to be consistent, because I think it's one of those, like, he's realizing he could be a bit of a pest defensively, but right. I think he's also just figuring it out, because like I've seen some mechanics with him where it's him like in stance guarding a screen and he just is right on someone's hip, like just the little stuff you don't see that, right. Like bugs you at sometimes when you're watching, because like just like the coaches all out there would watch it and be like, oh my gosh, yes. And he's like made some steals just by being in someone's grill. I've seen him make some reads on the court where like he's the last line of defense, he surveys the whole court and then all of a sudden just explodes at the last second for like a block at the rim where I'm like, whoa, that was nice. Mm-hmm. In the beginning of the year, he was also showing like he was a pest, like bothering the ball, like competing. I think you just need to see it more consistently, because I know what you're talking about when you watch him. But I think it's there, like the upside is there. It just needs to be unlocked on a more consistent level, because that's why I'm so high on him, because I think he can be a bit of a, you know, a dog when it comes to defensive ability at the next level. And guys like that, you know, when you get in the NBA, all of a sudden you're not going to be the offensive focal point. So you better bring it defensively, because you're going to be a rookie that needs to earn his shots. So I don't know, that one's going to be interesting. Still trying to figure out what Tari Eason's going to do, see where he ends up on my board. So yeah, I think I'm just pumped, Metcalf. I'm just excited. What else you got? Anything?
I don't think so. I think that's kind of it for me. Do you have anything else? If not, I guess what's the best thing you saw recently?
It's hard for me not to talk about that game. The end of the Wisconsin-Purdue game was just so insane. Jaden Ivey coming down hitting, or Johnny Davis hitting the bank three, which was just absurd. And then Jaden Ivey coming down and hitting the three, and then just the three off the glass to win it was just like, oh my gosh, that game was so awesome. It's been awesome to see all these games just now are getting just crazy right before March Madness. Like I'm foaming at the mouth. What about you?
Nick Stauskas, 100 points in 2 games.
Yes.
He's back.
Sauce Castillo.
He's back.
Get him a contract. I mean, Isaiah's back in the NBA. We got to get Stauskas up there. I love it. It was when I saw those numbers, I was like, oh my gosh. And then he did it again. And I was like, oh my goodness. he low key also looks like ripped out of his mind now. So shout out Sauce. Like, geez.
Yeah.
It's like, right, my man.
He was so much fun at Michigan. God, that was a fun year. But I don't need to go down memory lane. We're over an hour in. So Tyler, thank you for joining me. This was fun. Please tell the people where they can find you, how they can support you.
At noceilingsnba.com, we've got some very exciting stuff coming out soon. I promise, we keep saying that multiple times, but there's a reason why we've been waiting. So just keep supporting us. As I always say, the growth we've seen with everything, including this podcast, including the YouTube, like, it is awesome. I mean, it gets guys like me and Metcalf foaming at the mouth at 7 a.m. So thank you guys so much for your support. Yeah, I want to tell everything, but I can't. You guys are just gonna have to see. So it's exciting. What about yourself, Metcalf? Plug away. What do you got? You're gonna have a piece tomorrow, correct? While everyone's listening to this, you're gonna get double Metcalf duty.
So much Metcalf. One would say almost too much on a Friday.
Too much.
but by the time you're listening, my Jalen Williams piece should be out. Kind of go through his screening versatility. I promise it's a lot more fun than just looking at a bunch of different screens. He's a really unique offensive player that I'm still trying to really wrap my head around, but that should be out over on noceilingsnba.com. So please make sure to go over there, read that and everything else we put out, and subscribe. Rucker hinted at, we got a lot of really cool stuff coming in the future, but we're still putting out really cool stuff pretty much daily, whether written or pods over at Draft Deeper or NBA Deep Dives or Draft Act Podcast or stuff over on our YouTube at No Ceilings TV. Please make sure to go subscribe and follow all of it. You can also follow us on Twitter at No Ceilings NBA on Twitter. Nailed that. You can follow me on Twitter at TMetcalf11. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating. Until next time, see ya.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.